morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
How are you today?
Well, I'm fine, although I should share with our listeners that we have a box of Kleenex on the broadcast table today.
And a cup of tea.
Yes, and we're both suffering from the sniffles, so
yes,
we do apologize.
Yeah, yes. In advance.
It's sniffle season.
It's true. There's a lot of people down and out right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, Louise, do you find it unusually radical that you and I, as women, are sitting here at this point in time?
I wish I didn't. I don't think I did. But based on the research we did for today's show, I'm starting to think, yes, I am radical.
Not that long ago, this would have been highly unusual and also not approved of.
Oh, not approved.
No.
We do not approve.
No, because as recently as 1971, a woman, an art historian and researcher by the name of Linda Nochlin, wrote an essay that basically changed the way people look at women artists.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And basically her essay was called, Why Have There Been No Great Women Artists?
Yes. And I know that's a shocking sentence.
Yeah.
Because I think, wait a minute, that's not true. Yeah. No way. For sure there have been some great ones. And then I start my list and I end up at about maybe five on hand, I can, off the top of my head.
Yeah.
And who would they be? Emily Carr, Georgia O'Keeffe, right?
Right.
So
Daphne Ogig. You know, and they're kind of contemporary when you compare, you know, way back.
I can't go back.
No.
I can't go back past the early 1900s, I don't think.
Well, and that's exactly what her point was, is really there was a systematic exclusion of women from the art world right up until the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, it was extremely challenging for women to get anywhere in arts.
Yeah. So we thought there would be an interesting... Now, this is a topic that came up when we did a show about myths in the arts.
Yeah.
And it was just one point, but it seemed to resonate with a few listeners, so we thought we'd explore it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And it's worth exploring because there's so many interesting...
There is. In fact, in the last 40 years, of course, there's been lots of other research and people digging back into the archives of various art schools and finding that there's more women than we imagined. Mm-hmm. It's just that they were not recognized.
Mm-hmm. And the truth is, just because you don't know something doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Right.
Right? So, and that's so important in many facets of life, whether it's your work or your family, and those that sometimes it's the stuff you don't know that's the scariest, you know?
Yeah.
Or the most important, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we want to shut down a little bit because we can only cope with so much at a time,
that's
right?
That's right. Yeah. So to quote Anna Maria Tremonti, who I was listening to on the way in, we're going to unpack it all for you today.
Ooh,
that was a great line.
Inside of an hour.
That's right.
We'll do it.
Unpacking. All right.
So,
but no box cutters. There's no box cutters.
Okay. I don't believe in box cutters.
No, because danger, very dangerous.
So the first sort of thing we're going to talk about is why. Why were women, first of all, why were no women considered great artists?
Mm-hmm.
Why were women not a major part of the art world from the very get-go, especially when we know that there were some trained artists way back, like in Michelangelo time even, right?
Yes.
And so let's explore that. Like, what were the reasons that we don't seem to have them in the history books?
Well, I'd like to challenge anyone to have any artist. If you're an artist, it's because you had a mother and a father. So that's the first thing off the bat. But I think there were legal structures then and shared values and mores that have don't exist anymore, that have been again unpacked.
Right,
right.
Well, one of the reasons was is women weren't allowed to study at the big institutions.
Yes.
And you know what the main reason was?
Why?
Because they were not permitted to be in the life drawing rooms.
Oh, because people were naked.
Yep.
Oh, right.
Not allowed to be near naked people.
Yes.
Of any gender.
Well, again, if you're going to have babies, you're pretty much going to have to be naked at some point.
Yes, but it's not acknowledged.
Yes,
that you have to be
absolutely
naked.
Not. No,
that's
no.
Right.
So it part of it is church and church and state.
Mm-hmm.
The hierarchy of kingdoms, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the king decided most things. You know, like if you're a journeyman. So you know that expression, a journeyman plumber or a journeyman bricklayer. The king was giving you permission to journey from town to town.
Oh.
Right? So it's really steeped in
history. Authoritarian
yes,
rule.
And women were not allowed to be journey persons.
No, they weren't permitted to have apprenticeships. Mm-hmm. And that's where most in them, you know, in the larger part of our art history here, apprenticeships are how the great masters were trained. Mm-hmm. You didn't go to a school. You trained under someone.
That's right.
And women just weren't allowed to do
that. And in fact, women had no legal status whatsoever. They mm-hmm. were a property of the property of their husbands.
Right.
Yeah. So no wonder.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they weren't artistic. Doesn't mean they didn't support the people in their lives who were.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's another point. But I mean, actually, and then speaking of being permitted.
Yes.
Another reason is that lots of times women who expressed an interest in being in the arts were not permitted by their fathers because their fathers were in control of the money.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they were not willing to pay for them to go to school mm-hmm. or to apprentice or to do anything, mm-hmm. they had no ability to do that.
That's
they'd be on the street, right?
Yeah, because they were property, more or less, and they were to be sold in marriage, mm-hmm. along with some items.
And you just didn't go live in an apartment in New York, right?
I know.
Like when 200 years ago.
No.
It just
even
didn't
100
happen.
Years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, like, I think of my mom and my grandmothers, you know, they really had three choices. They could be a nurse, they could be a teacher, or they could be a secretary.
Yeah.
Right? And actually, each of them was one of those things. So, you know, if it weren't for them, we wouldn't be here, certainly radio host.
I know. And
shocking.
This is the thing, to constantly acknowledge the work that women before us have done.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. the groundbreaking that's happened in the last 50 years.
That's right. And it might not seem like a big deal looking back, but it was a big deal, isn't
it? Really
it
was.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't forget,
mm-hmm.
like some of the young women right now in their 20s,
mm-hmm.
it's just been there forever for them. And
they
need to remember, they need to look.
Yeah, and they need to keep doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they'll change things for their daughters and so on and so forth.
That's
so,
right. And the other reason that
so
you
there
wanted...
there were four reasons in this paper from 1971.
Right, and there's, you made mention of it, and that is to be supportive of other people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is a really big reason. Artists, women artists, even up until, you know, 40 years ago,
mm-hmm.
were supporting their husbands who were artists.
Yes.
Supporting artist husbands. And some of the very, like now, are recognized and being, you know, more recognized in research so that there's actually more information on them. Were absolutely, like, married to very famous artists.
Yes.
Not just working artists.
Yeah, and it's the birds of a feather.
Yes.
Together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's true. And so, for instance, like
so, mother, son, sister, brother, husband, wife.
All
kinds of different relationships there.
Yeah. So you know much about the Dada movement? The Dadas.
A little bit, but certainly not as much as you, my wise.
Well,
you know, friend,
one of our favorite listeners, Karen Raven, actually emailed a link for me to Hannah Hawk, information about Hannah Hawk. In the, as she's referred to as the mama of the Dadas.
Aww.
Yeah, I know.
I love that.
And so in researching her and then researching more of the Dada movement, I realized that's actually a really important time. The Dadas was kind of the crux of when women really entered the mm-hmm. world of famous artists. Because that's Dada gave birth to the surrealists too,
right? And so they're not just breaking painting rules. They're also breaking social rules, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of times those movements, that's what's really happening in the art is a reflection of what society was going through at the time.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is early 1900s, mm-hmm. right? Kind of in that...
In the suffrage movement.
It was a really... I think that... Well, and the Dadaists kind of themselves called themselves the anti-artists. Like, they were making, you know, making fun of art making in a way, right? Like, the seriousness of art making. And they were breaking all kinds of rules to sort of say, this is about nothing. It's like the Jerry Seinfeld of the art world, right?
Yeah.
So they were, and also one of the, well, people would sort of recognize some of the names like Marcel Duchamp and, and Picasso was mm-hmm. part of it too.
Mm-hmm.
So, and photo collage kind of came into its being then, and that was what Hannah Hawk did. But her work was even more sort of reflective of the time, looking back on it now, than some of the other Dadaists.
Yeah.
So, but at the time...
Okay. So they're breaking things up as they saw it and putting it back together in a new way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is what we all do in life.
Well, we
really,
do, right?
I think.
I mean, that's kind of... Yeah.
And we're still doing it.
Yeah. If you break art, all art down, that's all we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so Hannah Hawk spent years supporting her artist husband.
Yes.
She was a fashion designer. She was an embroiderer. She sewed.
Right.
And she also wrote an article, a weekly article.
Yes.
About artwork. And I mean, all this for 10, 12 years just to support her artist husband.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until, you know, everybody, sorry, here we go with the crowdies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everybody started to feel a bit more settled and established that she actually started to do some of her own work.
Her own stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it takes a village to raise an artist, I guess,
I think
right?
It does.
And that's very true today, too. But, and then, you know, looking back, part of it is what is recognized as art, because, I mean, I guarantee you in the 1800s, women weren't going to Winners to buy their sweaters. They were,
no.
Everything was hand sewn and hand knit and,
yeah.
You know, pottery was made. And I mean, now we think of that as art when really then it was everyday life, mm-hmm. right? Even if you were, you know, everything in your home, making furniture, making, you know, now we sort of.
You call it crafts now.
Yes.
But really, I mean, it was how you made your living.
Absolutely. Yeah, mm-hmm. No different than doing the dishes. I mean, I guess the parallel could be, you know, in 100 years from now, people say, and men and women used to empty their own dishwashers. There was an art to, you know, to loading a dishwasher. I mean, that's the way they saw it. Well, if you need clothes, you got to sew them. If you want warmth, you got to knit, you know. And I think it'd be a good show one time to talk about the lost arts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we have to write this down.
Okay,
every show we do something else.
All right. I'm writing it down.
Yeah.
I didn't bring my sticky notes.
Oh my gosh. What are we going to do without the post-it notes?
Oh well.
So
use a Kleenex, I guess.
But you know, even in the earlier than the Dadaists, like the Impressionist movement, we have Mary Cassatt. And you know Mary Cassatt's
work,
right?
I know of her, yes.
Oh my gosh.
And she was an Impressionist.
She was an Impressionist. Mm-hmm. But she, the same thing, right? She had friends.
Yeah.
And she struggled and she actually wrote a lot about her experiences. She found that she didn't get into the Paris salons on her own merit.
Yes.
Women were only able to get into the salons by currying favor.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
And so you know what that means.
Yes, I do.
Right? You had to be somebody special, someone.
Yeah.
To get in.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. These salons were our internet. That's where everybody saw everything, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Or World Expos or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she couldn't get her. I mean, she was beyond most of the Impressionists.
Uh-huh.
You know, I look at her compared to Monet. Man.
Oh, that would just make me so frustrated.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And so she was declined.
Mm-hmm.
And then, she wrote about this whole experience, which is very helpful now for the historians. And one time had a piece that was declined 1 year, and she redid it and darkened the background and made it a darker piece, and it was accepted the following year. So she wrote about the frustration of that, just this kind of male-dominated feeling of, you know, the exhibitions at the time. I'm getting the green card.
Yeah, the green card.
So, yeah, Mary Cassatt's experiences are documented. Really interesting story mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. she has. Okay, we are already at our 15-minute break. So today you're listening to Artscape and Great Women Artists.
That's right.
And I'm Tracy Kutchker.
And I'm Louise Wallace.
Not yet great women artists, but still pretty good women artists, right?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't even dare to call myself an. I'm an art patron.
No, you're not.
About that.
Well, it's all broken down now.
Yeah.
Designers, artists.
I know.
You know, all that. Speaking of the Impressionists, we talked about Mary Cassatt mm-hmm. and then into the Dadaists. I want to point out that most people are aware of Marcel Duchamp and what he did. And actually, he's quite famous for the ready-mades, right?
Yeah.
Because when people make fun of artists, this is one of the things you can refer back to, right? The urinal and stuff like that.
Oh, right, yeah.
So Marcel Duchamp had a little sister.
Okay.
Suzanne.
Yeah.
And she was really very gifted. In fact, she got to go. What is that? The Paris school? Beaux Arts. I don't know.
Oh, l'École des Beaux-Arts.
Yeah.
Yeah. The
I'm
school
so
of
French, I don't.
Beautiful arts, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So she went there at the age of 16.
Wow.
Yeah. And she moved, she actually quickly married and divorced and moved, and then moved to Paris at the age of 21, just to be close to Marcel because she just wanted to make art.
Oh, it must have been something.
Yeah.
Then. Well, I mean, it's probably cold and, you know, miserable too, that no heating, no plumbing, but but something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, and so she was a photo collage artist as well and did amazing work. And
so what would they have been collaging? The printing press is invented by now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And photography.
Yeah.
Right. And they were creating, like, they were rebuilding our view of current events, yeah. right? So there'd be war images yeah. that they would be, like, think of Jen Dick.
Yeah, so disassembling and reassembling. Yes. Yeah, I see.
So you're right. making statements based on sort of current recognizable uh-huh. imagery uh-huh. And putting it together in new ways to make you go, whoa,
yeah. what the heck? Yeah, and the challenge is too, I mean, you know, modern commerce is so efficient. Just click here, buy now, ship, done. I mean, I think of them and I think, how do they even get paint or canvas?
You know, there's no opus.
No opus. No, right?
Yeah.
So they had to mix their own paint yeah. and figure all that out. They had to be pretty crafty.
Yeah. Like in Vermeer's time, because yeah. we just learned about that with the exhibition on screen, that he had a pigment supplier and then he just had to find his own sources of
and
oils
tools and horse yeah, hair you for made brushes. You made your own. Yeah. That would be a great course, how to make your own paint and paint brushes.
That would just be, most people wouldn't make art if they had to make their own.
I know. So we need to be mindful of the conveniences of modern life sometimes, right? Yeah.
And so then Suzanne was able to exhibit at the Paris salons by 22 because of the influence of Marcel. So this is the thing, right? You got family, you got connections,
yeah.
you get somewhere.
Right.
But she, again, like one of the only women artists.
Still true today, though.
Well, yeah, a little bit. Except that, I mean, at the time, and we're talking about like a handful, like five women artists who were kind of recognized in the Dada movement and were recognized at the time.
Yes.
And that is the difference, right? Sometimes we can go back now and say, oh, look at that. Look at Artemisia Gentileschi. Like, holy, she was as good or better yeah. than Caravaggio, mm-hmm. but she wasn't recognized at the time mm-hmm. for that.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there's always theories about how much women have influenced their artist husbands.
Yes.
And maybe actually did the work.
Right.
And it was attributed to the husband yes. just simply because.
Yeah, because again, the ownership is what we celebrate. Who did it? Who presented it? Who owned it? Not necessarily yeah. who. Well, not, sorry to go back. Who owned it? Who presented it?
Mm-hmm.
Who signed it?
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean that's who did it.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and it does go back to the Renaissance and before, mm-hmm. you know, like Roman times, Egyptian times. I mean, pretty sure Nefertiti had a big influence on her circle of friends.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, what do you know about Nefertiti?
Well, I don't know that much, except that she is credited as being an important person in terms of here we go. She was the queen from 1348 to, no, that's backwards. BC.
Yeah.
So it's backwards, 1348 to 1336, right?
Right.
Because we're getting closer to the zero mark. Reigned during the New Kingdom, and she was a good example of the naturalistic Amarana style. So,
what?
She actually sculpted.
She was a sculptor.
Yeah.
See, I did not even know that.
Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, it was such an ornate period, if you look at Egyptian history.
So right. how many other women do you think were doing that at the time?
Documented. Maybe while the men folks were out building pyramids, the women were, you know, decorating what are they? Sarcophagi. Yes. Ooh, plural. There you go. There's so many of them. I'm trying to find here names that you, Medici was the wife of Henry IV, and she would commission paintings to glorify her,
mm-hmm.
her importance.
Oh yeah, the Medici family was hugely yeah. influential in the art world yeah. in terms of who they commissioned artwork
yes,
from.
Yes, and they were, because they were corporate czars, weren't
yeah.
they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
big time.
Yeah.
Talk about changing
and
the course
And you still see
history.
Their influence in Florence today.
Yeah.
Their museums, they're everywhere, those Medicis.
Yeah. Like the Rockefellers.
That's right. They're like the Rockefellers. Or the Rockefellers are like the Medicis.
Yeah. yeah.
So there are all these big names, but under all of those, or behind all those big names, are much smaller, lesser known names who certainly had a massive influence on the way we view art and the way we view working in the arts. And it's not just painting and sculpture. I mean, we have to think about literature and drama, you know. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure Shakespeare didn't do it all by himself.
Yeah. Well, and
a
lot
know
of,
that.
I yeah.
Mean, yeah.
And women playing the supportive role wasn't always the wife just going out and actually working and making money. It was sometimes like the artistic support. Like in Manet's time, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of his models were artists as well. And that, but the work was the modeling, and then that means they could hang out with the the group.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah,
that'd be a fun time.
And then Bertha Morisot is a good example because she's one of the only ones that's been recognized as an artist as part of the Impressionist movement. But,
yes,
but at the time, no, she did not get any kind of fame or recognition.
No. And
now it's just in, you know, looking back.
Yeah,
we
be
can
interesting.
Say, wow,
it would be such an interesting story to take the. The famous women painted in famous men's paintings,
mm-hmm.
and understand who they were.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Like, well, in Manet's work,
Venus
almost
de Milo,
all of them were artists.
Yeah,
that's what he did. It was kind of a weird thing. Mm-hmm. I don't imagine that many artists used other artists as models very often in history.
No.
Oh, I'm just talking out of my whatever.
But right you know, the women in Metz's paintings or the ballerinas in.
Degas,
yeah. Or who else am I thinking of? The Birth of Venus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was stunningly beautiful, but she was a person or based on a person.
Yeah.
And the Mona Lisa and, you know, who mm-hmm. were these women and what was their stories and why were they there and why did they agree to this, you know?
Why did they
what agree? Was in it for them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, modeling was a pretty decent gig for a woman, right?
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't, weren't scrubbing floors anyway.
Well, yeah, fair enough. Do you think they were paid?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
not much,
gig.
But it was a gig.
Yeah. Or the dancers in Toulouse-Lautrec that they, I would really like to meet them.
Yeah. Well, you have to remember too, that sometimes these guys were, they actually weren't using, you know, models the way that we think about models now.
Yeah. Yeah.
They actually would.
They weren't like phoning them up and can you come down to the studio? I want to paint you.
Yeah. It, in the more recent times, like the last 100 years, there was a lot more freedom and mm-hmm. abstract sort of, you know, well, that's of course the move from Impressionism to Expressionism mm-hmm. became looser and just more big block colors. So they didn't necessarily need the models. They needed the inspiration mm-hmm. of those models, mm-hmm. but then they didn't need the sitting time, right?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. So
okay.
they'd go to the ballet studio and get their inspiration and
yeah,
go home.
Yeah, and bring their easel and mm-hmm. and sketch. And
yeah.
Oh, lovely. How lovely. But, can we talk a bit more about more recent examples like the Georgia O'Keeffe's and the Emily Carr's and the...
Yeah.
Right? So it's...
Emily Carr's another great example yeah. of a vocation that she chose that her family didn't approve of,
mm.
right? And she kind of had to
well,
fight
yeah,
and disassociate herself from mm-hmm. her family in order to pursue art.
And did she move far away so she could do that?
Yeah, she was from England, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, see, I should know more about this. She is our local.
Well, she's ours now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is, I mean, that's happened too, where mm-hmm. people from all over, like Mary Cassatt actually was an American.
Yes.
She went to study in Paris, came back to the States, and then thought, what the?
Like, yeah.
There is nothing mm-hmm. for me here. At least she wasn't allowed to study. She wasn't allowed to exhibit. She wasn't allowed to mm-hmm. be part of anything. And mm-hmm. there was a big, you know, I mean, that was Edgar Degas' time, right? And she was friends with him and went back to Paris and said, what? Like, well, I need to get into yeah. the crowd here. And so he helped influence.
I wonder why Paris. Well, I think I know why Paris. The French are just more open about sharing
yeah.
knowledge and opportunity. It's always been the case, but.
Except that there's been an like in the essay that Linda Nochlin wrote, it talks about this Eurocentric boys club
okay.
that still persists, like uh-huh. right up into the 70s when she wrote this. It's still there.
Uh-huh.
And even in the Dadaist movement, like they talk about, she talks about the Surrealists because the Surrealists actually, as a spinoff of the Dadas, involved more women. Like mm-hmm. Frida Kahlo was mm-hmm. a Surrealist.
Yes.
Right? But
those wild Mexican.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And then there was, I mean, it just, the Dadaists never really went through that transformation, right? Mm-hmm. There was just so few,
mm-hmm.
but it was the beginning. But yeah, I mean, there
but
was
But at
just,
least the movements happened there. It didn't happen here.
Yeah.
In fact, I would argue that it's still not quite happening here.
Yeah, when we're I still think a of, bit behind.
Yeah, in the, Canadian art history, the Group of Seven, which were seven guys, you know,
mm-hmm.
Refus Global, most the Quebec movement, mostly men, all very talented, but it's almost, right?
Yeah.
I guess there was Mary Pratt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
That was
so if you were going to curate the great Canadian collection, you'd have Carr and Mary Pratt.
Yep.
Who else would you have?
Well, I mean, how far are you going to go, right? Because
well,
we
don't
could
know, like,
go into the 80s and 90s. You got some significant installation
yeah, tell
artists
me.
Coming
yeah.
forward.
Well, oh, you know, I mean... Janet Cardiff,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
Who will be showing at the gallery this summer?
Yes. Just thought we'd drop
that's
that
right, unnecessary promotional plug.
Yeah. But and just once you got into this sort of pop art, right, like after the Andy Warhol stuff, right, then you start to see more women. And the installation artists like Cindy Sherman, these are artists who really grabbed the new media of installation because it was their realm, right? Like this is what they did. They set up house.
Yes.
And so installations were a natural fit. Yeah. I'm going to give you as a viewer an experience. I'm not just going to show you something that's flat on the wall.
Right.
Or a sculpture that's behind plexiglass.
No.
I'm going to let you into this room.
Right.
And let you experience what my life is
like.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. Okay.
Like British artist Tracy Emin.
Yes.
You know, her work, she's an installation artist from Brit. She's part of a gang, the Brit Arts, right? And her installations are hideous.
Really?
Right? Like, she's quite well known for one called My Bed.
Yes.
It's like her bed. It's her unmade, dirty bed with used condoms and bloody underwear.
Oh, God.
She had a horrible upbringing. It was not nice at all.
Wow.
And she is another one who worked in the fashion industry in order to help support her friend, who was he was a fashion school dropout, was a poet, wanted to write poetry and publish a weekly.
Yeah.
And she became his editor and did the work for like 10 years to kind of support this guy, and then went back and got her MA.
Dues that you pay, it would seem.
It does seem, and it just keeps coming back. Mm-hmm. Like the women just end up becoming the props, right? The support.
Yeah.
Here, I'll help you, and but, I'll get my influence. I'll get my joy from doing my backroom artwork.
Yes,
but they don't get to be the front and center with the guy going, "That's fine. Right. I'll go and clean streets so that you can do this."
Yeah. But the social constraints were different, and they're always evolving, right?
Oh, for sure.
But I do think that things like fashion and what used to be called home economics, you know, those are forms of art, but they just weren't celebrated forms of art.
Right.
I mean, so if you can't hang it in a gallery, it didn't really count. And yet, it'd be interesting to explore even the First Nations aspect. Like the women in First Nations cultures are very... Our artists are very creative.
Mm-hmm.
Are they celebrated? You know, so it usually things like this repeat in different cultures.
Yeah,
whether it's Asian or right.
Yeah. Oh, and the same thing happened in the East.
In
terms of when women were starting to be recognized, right around the same time. So culturally, it was kind of very parallel.
Right. That's right. So we got the green card again.
Yes, here we go. So today, here we are on Artscape talking about women artists. Of course, kind of an enormous subject to cover in 45 minutes or so.
I know, I feel woefully inadequately researched for this, but we just wanted to have the conversation.
It is a conversation start too, right?
And like, it's not a complaint, it's just recognition
of it. It is, and we just need to remember. That's the important part. Well, I want to mention something.
Yes. Speaking of important things.
Yes.
Yes.
There's always important things. First, if you love community radio.
So
if you want to show your support for this radio station, buy a membership.
Yes, because societies need numbers, right? They need to know we have this many paid members.
Well, that's pretty much it. It's all about the numbers. It's showing that your community needs you.
Yes, and they're formal structures. And I mean, really, a membership, depending on what the rate is, only pays for renewing memberships, you know.
Pays for the admin time to write a little card.
So it is really and truly the principle.
Yeah.
That you show your support by becoming a member.
Right.
Yeah.
So yes, please become a member.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know Jeanette Clement, who's a wonderful
gal.
Oh my gosh, she knows so much. She's here in the afternoons. I'm sure that she'd be welcoming anyone to walk in the door.
And follow the Voice of the Shoe Shop on Facebook and on Twitter.
Yeah.
There's plenty.
And you can listen live.
Yeah.
And lots of people do. We have 4 people listening live right now.
No, I'm sure we do. And you can listen online in the evenings. Yeah. I often listen to the show other shows. It's great.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's kind of lots of not so great stuff on TV.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm on the mothership. I won't say who that is.
Yes.
I find I have to turn it off.
Yeah.
Because the bad news just keeps coming and coming, coming.
I know.
And I'm like, oh, I'm done. I'm done with that.
That's so right.
Voice of the Shoe Swap.
Yeah. No, it's great. Great dinner party.
Yeah.
And if there's no talk show, there's music, which is lovely.
Yeah.
So let someone curate music for you.
Yeah.
That's great. So speaking of artists, women in the arts, it wasn't just about artists, was it?
Mm-hmm.
No.
No, there was a huge network of people that would have had influence on this.
That's right. called patrons of the art. It's such an obnoxious word to patron.
I know, because it means patronizing. Yes. Or it's, you know, yeah. It's the root of
I'm
patronizing.
I'm pleased to meet you. I'm a patron of the arts. Right?
Do you introduce yourself like that?
No. But I do consider myself a patron of the arts because I love the arts. They make my life so much better, but I am not an artist. Mm. So, but you can't art. It's, you know, you can't have art without people who love art.
Yeah.
It's a relationship, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, look at our Dolores.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, this community has benefited because she loves art.
Oh yeah. She should have like a crown and a t-shirt. I'm the patron of the arts. And she works with Caravan and she does.
Yeah.
Right. So a lot of times there's a ripple effect.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, these women, I would say, were the unsung heroes of the big artistic movements and the men that we recognize mm-hmm. today. Right. And, they can go back as far as even, wow, this isn't a great example because she is recognized, but for other things, mm-hmm. Marie Antoinette was, a patron of the arts.
Yeah.
And she had, her hairdresser was trained in painting. And so many people will remember Marie Antoinette, well, other than getting her head cut off and all that stuff. But prior to that, her wild hairdos.
Yeah.
And so not only would her hairdresser do the wild hairdos, she would also paint, do portraits of the royal family.
Wow.
So that, I thought that was interesting.
Well, you have to be an artist to do hair like that. I can tell you that.
Yeah. So you can be a queen or you can just be a regular. A lot of these women were independently wealthy through inheritance. Peggy Guggenheim, Gertrude Stein, and they wanted to use their money for good. So they would often sort of quote unquote adopt struggling artists like the Picassos. And right.
Oh my gosh.
And not pay them a wage, but just house them and feed them.
Yeah.
Right.
And keep buying their work.
Yeah. And then reselling their work and then making collections and,
educating other people to become patrons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can't remember now, but it was either, I think it was Peggy Guggenheim who, Gertrude Stein had a collection and she was about to show it in Paris. She had rented the space and then the Germans came in a week. The Germans were coming. So she fled to the south of France. And after the war, she bought a piece a week.
Wow.
I think it scared her that she could have lost all this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it almost redoubled her efforts to,
Interesting.
Yeah. And then Peggy Guggenheim had a huge collection, so she would have bought pieces but also sold them, so they were like dealers in a way, make sure that they got into the right hands. So those people who promote artists are so important to, right? They're part of the channel.
Yeah,
they're the Amazon and eBay and iTunes of our day.
That's right.
Right. And she has a lovely house, or had a lovely house in Venice, right on the Grand Canal. And it's still there and you can visit it, and you can just, I went when I was in Italy a while back. I can't remember. But, and nobody wanted to come with me.
Oh,
so, well, that's fine.
If I was there, I totally would have come with you.
But I didn't know you then. And, because sometimes I can out, my friends get museumed out, they call it. So they're like, we're just going to go shopping. You go and look at your special paintings. We'll meet you back here later. So that's fine. Anyway, I figured out how to find it. And I had to ask a bunch of people in Italian, how do I go? And they'd be like, go front, go left, go. It's anyway, it was exciting. And, but I kept, when I was in the house, like, it's like a normal house. And, I just kept thinking, man, the dinner parties here must've been awesome.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Oh God, no kidding.
Yeah. Sitting in a room full of Picassos and among many other things, but, yeah, it was lovely.
Hey, speaking of dinner parties.
Yes.
Well, it's just brings to mind Judy Chicago.
Yes.
What a, you know, because that's kind of what's happening today.
Yeah. So she was an artist and a patron of women.
Yes.
At the same time.
Yeah.
Double whammy, right? Yeah. And she has a piece. It's still in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You can still see it.
Oh.
It's called The Dinner Table.
Yeah. No, I thought it was The Dinner Party. It was
The Dinner Party. Sorry. Yeah. I was thinking table, but party. Yes. Yeah.
And it's a big triangular table. And all 39 places.
Yes, 39 places representing 39 women in the arts. So it was an art piece, but it was also a historical perspective on these women.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
And there actually has been quite a number of artists who have done this. Women artists who have gone back and found women artists mm-hmm. in history mm-hmm. and have been exploring and depicting them.
Yeah, girl power.
Yeah, and gosh, I wish I had written down this woman's name, but this quite a long time ago, a woman did a series of watercolors of other women artists. And now historians look back at that collection to say, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so she really did something, right? She really mm-hmm. documented this mm-hmm. and created a piece of history mm-hmm. by herself, you know, 30 years ago, going back and yeah. looking at the history.
And that's, you know, the permanence of it is so yeah. important, too.
Yeah. And we often don't recognize it until that 30, 40 years
yes.
later, right? We never know in the time
yeah, so
that we're
never,
in a movement.
Exactly. Yeah. You never know. No. I wonder what I'll be remembered for.
Orange.
Although today I have
you're going to be the
polka dots.
Orange movement.
Oh yeah, okay.
You'll be like, oh yeah, that Louise
yeah,
Wallace Richmond started
about,
the orange movement.
I know. What's a shame about orange is also tied to other things that weren't very nice.
Oh,
like the orangists and
oh like yeah,
Ireland. Okay. And, yeah, so. But right. I'm wrestling it away.
From it's because everything's been done.
Yeah, I know.
We can't really, and even Picasso said this, right? Everything's been done.
Yes.
All art's been made.
It's true.
It's just us remaking
it. It's true.
Yeah.
But it lasts forever. And then, you know, other women, and the other thing is you didn't have to be royalty or you didn't have to be an heiress. You could just be a mom, right? Mm-hmm. And not just a mom. I mean, hello.
Yeah.
Biggest job ever. But Andy Warhol's mother was very influential.
Really?
Yes, and very supportive. Like she moved to New York City to be with him.
Aww.
And she used to bring him his lunch, right? And the more, the sad part is the more famous he got, the more he started to dismiss her. But up until he got to
being, I almost said typical man.
Yeah, you don't know, but I mean, up until he got to being Andy Warhol,
yeah,
she was like his number one support system, his number one fan.
Yeah.
Didn't he eat soup every day? That's why. Maybe she made him soup every day.
Maybe.
I think that's, yeah.
So that inspired the Campbell Soup series.
Yeah, exactly. And then finally, you can be, you don't even have to be married or related, this Van Gogh's sister-in-law.
Right.
Right? So.
That was enormous.
Extended family.
Yeah,
and
because
he could have. Took care of that fella, didn't she?
Oh, totally. And his work could have just gone under a cupboard somewhere
yes.
and never been discovered had it not been for her, because Theo died very shortly after Vincent died.
And how could you go through life without Starry Night? I don't think. I could do it.
No. It was a magical piece mm-hmm. and it still is.
Right. And then Jackson Pollock's wife and,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, so this idea that it's the relationship between the artists and their patrons and their patron can be the matrons or,
yeah.
right. Or
yeah.
heiresses or royalty or right. Mm-hmm. And so we all, and so oftentimes people will disconnect from the arts because they're like, well, I'm not an artist.
Mm-hmm.
I got no business being there, mm-hmm. right? But you can still, you know, make a very incredible, even more important contribution than some artists will make, right? And that's true too of drama, music. How do you think U2 would be U2 without us?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Or do you think the Beatles would be the Beatles without us?
That's right. The right? audience makes the
audience makes so. Makes such a big deal. So mm-hmm. it's important to reframe the thinking a little bit when we're talking about women in the arts, is to remember that the arts is all of us
mm-hmm.
and we all have a role to play if we so choose.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. And we have to remember that the arts includes more than the fine arts.
Right? Oh.
Because we think sometimes when somebody says the arts sector, you just think about painters.
No, painters and sculptors, but there's jewelry makers,
yeah.
right?
There's
fashion,
the literary
designers.
Arts. Yeah.
Literary arts, yeah.
There's culinary arts.
Yeah, like literary arts, I think of Dorothy Parker
mm-hmm.
and the Algonquin Round Table.
Yeah.
Bunch of guys
yeah.
and Dorothy. Sitting around.
She is.
I actually, when I went to New York, I went to the Algonquin Hotel.
Did you?
Just to sit in the room.
Did you see it? Like, did they still have the big round table?
I was
table?
A bit overwhelmed, but yeah, I think it's still there.
That's so amazing.
Or,
Could you imagine being at that time and that table pulling up your chair?
Yeah, I think I paid like $12 for a drink, but it was just so important to go because she was my absolute, she had tortured soul.
She was, had a really difficult life.
Yeah, but she did so much for the literary arts and mm-hmm. art criticisms in the New Yorker and, you know, just the intellectualizing that experience and her work will live forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that round table, man, that, again, awesome dinner parties. Maybe I'm just searching for the best dinner party ever.
Yeah.
I wonder who would be at my table of 39. That would be interesting.
What a great exercise to go through.
Right?
If you could sit down with 38 other women artists. Yeah.
Okay, well.
Oh my gosh.
Peggy
it's actually
Guggenheim,
quite. Yeah,
for sure.
I could tell. You're a Peggy Guggenheim fan. Yeah.
But it would have to be in Venice.
Yeah. Be at your place.
Yeah.
Like we're coming
to your house.
I'm inviting myself.
That's right. But there'd be many women at that table.
Yeah.
And not all of them would be artists.
Yeah.
Some would
well, that's right.
That's singers and fashion designers. And,
yeah.
And designers. Betsy Johnson, the fashion designer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you got me going.
Okay. I'm that'll be enough. Maybe that'll be our New Year's. Who are we inviting to our New Year's party?
Yeah, we'll have a show called The Dinner Party.
The Dinner Party.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, formidable. So exciting.
And now,
as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Drama.
Drama. Okay, cast your time clocks back to 2012.
Yeah. The end of the world.
That's right. So, now, most of the money action happens at auction.
Yeah,
houses.
Certainly all nowadays.
Right. So,
and there's always
skill testing question.
Oh, okay, I'm ready.
Okay,
I'm
are
ready.
You ready?
Okay.
In 2012, the top 100 auction sales ranked by price. Do tell me, contestant Tracy, how many women were on that list?
In the top 100.
Top 100.
Auction sales.
Auction sales. 2012.
I know the answer to this.
You do? I bet you do.
Zero.
Zero. Isn't that shocking?
It is shocking.
Yeah.
Out of 100. Not top 10.
No.
Not top 20.
Yeah.
100.
100.
Not a single female.
You know, it's so shocking. It makes me want to punch a painting.
What I know. A great segue.
I know I'm being facetious, but someone was sentenced to 6 years in jail this week for punching a Monet. It will be restored and fixed and everything, but
that's really dramatic.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was his excuse?
So angry.
Well, how can you be mad at Monet?
Yeah. How could you be mad at who? What did he ever do to you? So there's two stories. One, it was intentional, an act of vandalism. Very sad.
Oh,
poor behavior. Yeah. The other side is that he had a heart condition and his heart he had like an episode. And fell into the painting and just
fist
happened.
First.
Yeah, fist first, which would really suck, you know.
I don't know how many people having a heart attack would lunge fist first into something, but that's a very, I guess, it's a possibility.
It could happen. Anything could happen, right? Just like we could get a woman on the top 100 of...
It's
not just about the money, but it's really...
Well, it's just it's an example of how... I mean, and even curators talk about this, because this is one of the things that are in the aftermath of the essay, of the Lynn Nochlin essay, is that people started to look at, how can we change the situation? And even curators, really famous ones who shall remain nameless, the Guggenheim, acknowledges that women... artists are never
as big a draw.
They're not great the way that a Cezanne is great or great the way Picasso is great.
Oh.
I know. So it's kind of a weird
décourage. I'm découragée. It's French for discouraged.
Yeah. So we've got a long way to go.
Yes, and so maybe we can talk a little bit before we go into the arts events. We could talk a little bit about what we can do here and now and today.
Yeah, because the here and now and today in our own community is all we really have the power to change.
Yes.
And so by doing that, you have the power to influence the rest of the world. So in our own community.
Yes, and so in our own show called Dark Nights of 10, another skill testing question. Of the 10 local artists featured in the current exhibition at the Simon Arm Arts Center, how many of them are women?
7.
Yay! Not zero. And they're, you know, so talented.
Yeah.
Right? Jen Dick, Judy Sims, Elaine Holmes' piece.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Elaine Holmes' piece is so spectacular. Yeah. I've had people come in, literally, their jaw drops. Yeah. Like,
Marg Robertson, Rebecca Shepherd, Lois McLeod, and Sharon. Well, I mean, I have a special place for Sharon Olford.
Yeah.
I love her work.
Yeah.
But they're all lovely.
Yes.
Yeah. And important.
Yeah. And Dark Nights is all about this time
but
of the...
But the three guy pieces are awesome, too.
Yeah. Oh, they're all awesome. Yes, all 10. Of course and all it's awesome. It's a very great privilege to put together a show like this.
Yeah, and the caliber, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes, I mean, I personally have fun mixing media and mixing levels of emergence, you know, like getting a couple of emerging artists mixed in with some very established artists, mid-career
well,
artists.
It's a form of mentorship, apprenticeship.
It is.
Yeah.
And it ups everybody's game, right? So I like the mix is fun on a theme, and only there's only so many artists in this community kind of willing to jump in and do that kind of thing, but they are amazing.
Yes.
They are gifted and they work and they are challenged and they fight and sometimes they pull all nighters to figure this out, but they do it.
So if you might have a dream like we do to see the prominence of women in the arts increased, and if you do have a dream, check out Dream Desk, Otto Fanschwitz's Dream Desk. It's wicked awesome. It's a visual, audio, sculptural. There's so many levels. It's a little bit mind-blowing. So
I have to tell my story.
Okay, tell your story.
For anybody who follows me on Twitter, at SAG Curator, just saying, they would have heard this. On the day before the opening, we Otto brought the piece in and got it set up. And then the next morning I came in and I was alone in the office and I was working away, doing my thing and making noises. And then and at one point after I'd been in there for half an hour, there was no noise. I was just reading on the computer and I could hear.
Okay, I'm spooked out.
I was like, oh, what? God, somebody's in here. And I was just like, you know, how it's kind of dark in the morning and you're just, you know, and everything's, and I don't know, you just don't expect to hear.
Yeah.
It took me a full on 10 seconds or so to remember, oh yeah, it's Otto's piece.
Otto's piece.
And so I tweeted that. I'm like, I can hear Otto breathing, but Otto's not here.
Yeah. Da, da, da. That also dramatic moment.
Another dramatic.
That's right.
But anyway, it is a really spectacular show. And that's here's the other thing is that I, my lighting director, I had to tell him, okay, every piece gets one light. And he looks at me like I'm completely crazy. Yes. So every piece has one light.
Because it's dark nights.
Dark nights. Mm-hmm. And so it seems dark in the gallery. So I think when we're open, people are like, oh, they're not even open because there's not hardly any lights on.
Open. And when does this show finish?
Because on the 20th.
On the 20th.
And so it's kind of because it's about the solstice and, and sort of how
And the 21st is that. I gotcha.
Yeah. So
you're so clever.
I think about these things way in advance.
Way in advance. 18 months to 2 years if you're thinking of applying for a show.
Yeah.
FYI.
Anyway, the show goes until December 20th, but we are open on Thursday nights until 8 o'clock.
That's right.
So you can come in at the dark time and experience the exhibition.
Yeah, it really is a lovely
show.
And there's other things we can do as women for women in the arts. You can mentor young artists. I know, like in our house, my mom is an art patron, I guess, and also an artisan, but she used to buy me art.
Oh.
As a present.
How lovely.
Right?
That's so. Yeah, that is something that is very easily reached.
Like, and so I always had a collection.
Yeah.
And it never ended up never in the garage sale or the thrift store. It's still there,
For sure. Yeah. Because art doesn't really wear itself out.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, my girls started their collections very young.
Lovely.
And they have purchased some of their own pieces.
Oh, wow.
From some of the shows that we've had, you know, like the Affordable Art Fair and the Gems of the Shoe Swap and the Postcard Exhibition. Mm-hmm. So they've purchased their own works.
Yeah. And they are, it is quite affordable.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Not everything is $25,000.
Exactly.
My gosh.
Exactly. And amateur art, well, I don't know why they call it amateur art, but is quite an interesting investment strategy.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. So take it in when they're emerging and encourage them along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know. You might end up with a, do you know that I have, okay, I hope that Janet Cardiff isn't listening to this. I have a Janet Cardiff monoprint that she did when she was doing a sample in class one day because I studied under her in University of Lethbridge. She did this little monoprint. It's like an angel sort of figure, really fast, which is with a rag and her fingertip on a plate, right?
Yes.
And And she did this quick thing, pulled the print, showed us what to do, and then chucked this thing in the garbage. Of course, me, I fished it out of the garbage and said, could you sign this? She's like, yeah, yeah, whatever.
There will be no chucking of things in the garbage. That's right.
Wow. Yeah, I know. So, I mean, there's just things like that. And now, I mean, gosh, like she was amazing then.
Yes.
Because she was a gifted artist and a really gifted instructor. Mm-hmm. I really quite enjoyed taking
Well, that's a great example. You learned so much from her.
But yeah, but now, 20 years later, she's... Yes. Superstar,
yeah,
you know, status,
yeah.
So yeah, that was a good investment.
Wow, no
pulling
kidding.
That out of the garbage. Anyway,
yeah, I have pieces of yours at my house. I consider them very valuable.
And those were in my early landscape days because I was not a landscape painter when you started collecting my work. Right, like I was printmaking and drawing and doing figurative work, and
you know, like days like yesterday and the day before when the market is going crazy and. The TSX is dropping and the oil is dropping. I'll look at my paintings and think, huh, well, that didn't lose any value today.
Yeah,
right? So I'm not suggesting it's your only strategy, but it's an important one. So part of it is being making an economic investment into original art. I don't mean the stuff at Winners.
No. Nope.
Because that's a licensee, if they even licensed it. Arrangement, I mean actual artists that you know.
Yeah.
And that's the connection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what makes the energy good is when there's a connection.
And taking young people to art galleries.
Yeah, absolutely. Including your kids in art gallery stuff. Now there's a Elves workshop that we're doing at the gallery this coming Saturday on December 13th. And it's something we do every year, and it's something that the DIA helps us out with. And we have four Christmas tree decoration.
Four stations.
Yes. Creation stations.
Creation stations.
And so families with young children can come in and make tree ornaments.
Or help your, you know, older siblings can help their younger siblings make, right? Yeah. And so all of those decorations will go on that lovely big tree that is...
Well, they, you know, we had
the plant?
The lovely trees that are... No, the lovely little live trees that are outside the gallery. Mm-hmm. We've got two of them and we put ribbons on them and they look pretty. Mm-hmm. Saying, okay, now for the next 3 weeks, every tree decoration you make, you can put on the tree. Well, guess how many tree decorations have made it to the tree?
No, because they want to bring them home.
They do. They want to take them home because they are precious.
Yes, the sense of ownership. It's so important, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've got like three decorations on those trees.
Well, so,
but the ribbons look nice, so it's fine.
If you're not emotionally attached to decorating, maybe help us out and make a few of your own, right?
Yeah. But actually, anybody can come into the Elves workshop and make something to put out there.
You don't have to be an elf.
Yeah.
Or even a child.
That's right.
Do you?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll come do that.
So that's 11 to 4, Saturday the 13th.
Yes.
And there's all kinds of things happening in the downtown. We're so lucky.
It's true. And Thursday is Shop Late. There's other arts events. Is Bah Humbug.
Yep, Ball Humbug at Shoes Hope Theater. I wanted to talk about the Christmas pantomime because that's on this weekend as well.
Okay.
Because we were talking about women artists and the whole women cross-dressing thing was kind of a fun segue, but we never got to it. But anyway, Shoes Hope Theater does this traditional Christmas pantomime every year. And there's always a man dressed up as a woman somewhere in the play. Mm-hmm. So make sure you check that out.
Huh.
Bah Humbug.
Bah Humbug.
ShoesHopTheater.com to get your tickets. Lovely. And they're available at Entwined Fiber Arts.
And then Caravan is starting. Is it tonight? Yeah.
No, I think
tonight,
it's...
Wednesday?
Oh, maybe it is. Maybe Thursday.
It's tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night it
tomorrow
starts.
Tomorrow night it opens.
Right.
Lovely.
And it's the Contest of the Winds. Mm-hmm. And the winter show is so much fun, except that there's no snow right now.
Well, the winter show, they'll drag you around, too. That's just kind of fun.
Well, that's the thing. But they're on the wagon until there's enough snow.
Right. And even the choreography of the horses,
how
they get everybody in and out. Yeah. You just sit, just bring a blanket.
Yep.
Or maybe a garbage bag, because it's been pretty wet. And a blanket. Yeah. And do support Caravan. I think it's one of Canada's national treasures. And we have it right here in our backyard.
I know.
Yeah.
It's quite, we are very fortunate. Mm-hmm. We have a lot going on. Mm-hmm. You can find more arts events information on our website at www.shoeswapartcenter.ca. Mm-hmm. If you click on the participate page, we list it just by date. We just say, here are the dates of things coming up. So today you've got this, tomorrow you got this, right? And that's, I mean, we just have so much going on in the community. That's really the best way to look at it.
Right.
You've got a free night. Check out the participate page.
And go for it. And so next week we'll be back and we'll get our Christmas spirit on. But first on Friday, what are we going to do on Friday?
I don't know.
Everybody's going to wear their...
Oh, it's Christmas sweater
Christmas sweater. better. So make yourself a canvas and decorate yourself with lovely, colorful wood. And if a lot of people say, well, I don't colorful wool. Wood, silly. So a lot of people say, I don't have a Christmas sweater. I say, don't worry, buy a sweater and make it yourself.
Yeah.
Put some
lights.
Did you know
that you can get a kit?
You can get a
Christmas sweater kit. I think it's Mark's Work Warehouse.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, so just have some fun.
Yes,
put some bells on yourself.
Go to the thrift store and go, some bells. Just go for it. And we'll see you around town. Oh, and donate $2 to your favorite charity. That's
right.
All it costs.
So Friday, December 12th is Christmas Sweater Day.
Yay! All over town. Thanks for your time today.
I'm Tracy Kutchker.
And I'm Louise Wallace Richmond.
You've been listening to Artscape, and we'll see you again next time.